E23, I think, Mark, are you teeing this one up?
I am.
Paper 24.
Yes, this is paper 24 on contract modifications. So the new revenue standard defines a contract modification as a change in the scope or price or both of a contract that is approved by both parties in the contract. The standard includes clear guidance on how to account for a contract modification as a new contract, as part of the original contract, or both. Some stakeholders have said that while the guidance in the new standard regarding contract modifications is clear, application of that guidance under either the full or modified retrospective transition method may present significant challenges. Those challenges are often due to the sheer volume of contracts or contract modifications that take place and the duration over which those modifications have taken place. Oftentimes, the complications can arise from the complexity of the modification itself. Stakeholders have acknowledged that there's guidance in existing U.S. GAAP and IFRS that provides some relief from retrospective application of a new accounting principle if it's impracticable to do so. However, stakeholders have stated that it's unclear whether the challenges arising from the application of the contract modification guidance meets the impracticable threshold. So questions for the TRG is whether or not this is a application of the contract modification guidance in transition is a pervasive issue that you believe warrants a practical expedient, similar to some of the other practical expedients that are provided for in the new revenue standard. And if you're in the camp of providing a practical expedient, what you think that practical expedient might be, keeping in mind that that expedient would apply to all companies in all industries. Because based on initial outreach, it seems that this issue may be more pervasive in some industries than others.
We'll start with discussion here in Norwalk. Views on not just whether, but if so, is there something that we could come up with that would really be responsive to the various situations that might arise? Mark?
It is a question that we've gotten. I don't know whether it's frequent, but a lot of companies with longer-term contracts that are modified quite often. As far as a practical expedient, I would think it wouldn't be unreasonable. I don't know whether you come up with dramatically different results either. If you just say the contract as it exists at the effective date seems like a reasonable way to do it. If a company wants to go back and look at every modification, then by all means, I'd let them do it. But I think in a lot of cases, the ones that are asking, it doesn't seem unreasonable to let them apply the guidance as it to the contract as it exists at that date.
Mark, one thing that would be helpful to us is, as the staff has tried to think about what the expedient might be, that's one fact pattern that we've thought of, and Mark and I just kind of kicking it around a little bit. It does seem like there's scenarios where that might result in an outcome that either A, doesn't make sense, and B, potentially might not make sense to the point such that the company might not want to take advantage of it. I'll spare you the details in the interest of time, but we think there's fact patterns where that might actually take revenue from, you know, 1997 and bring it to 2016, which probably wouldn't be attractive to the board, but probably also wouldn't be attractive to the companies as well. So I don't know if this meeting's the right setting, but at some point it'd be helpful to be able to talk with a few of you and kind of crunch through the numbers to figure out, you know, whether the suggestions, you know, would work or not.
Right. Yeah, I haven't talked to any clients that want to do that. They want to do the simple thing of contract as it exists. I haven't thought through all this. The ones I've talked to that didn't seem, I mean, it was where they were modifying it quite frequently. It's a 20-year contract, and it just keeps getting modified and renewed and stuff like that. It's like, well, can we just apply it to the contract as it exists of that date? And when I said I don't think that would be unreasonable, they liked the answer. I said, well, with that said, it's a paper that's on the TRG, so let's wait to see what the answer is. But the other way to go is that it was just impractical to do it, but it's not impractical to do it for a year back. Maybe 2 years, maybe going back to 1997 would be impractical, but I think any relief you can provide in this, if you just tell all companies to do it, you know, the modified as it exists that date. I don't know whether that has unintended consequences. I haven't heard anyone so far that wants to go back. So,
in your example, are you saying that as it exists as of the effective date, so the contract that will exist in 3 years, or sort of that as it exists at the date you begin the work? Because I could guess that they're not wanting to project forward what it's going to look like. So you're saying as of 1/1/15. I got you.
The ones that
I got
are doing retrospective that as of 1/1/15, so they've had a longer term.
I got you.
The ones I've talked to are in the aerospace and defense. I don't know that anyone's talked to anyone
Allison.
Else. But.
Yeah, I think similar to what Mark was said, that's where I've heard the questions coming up, but appreciate that it could be in other industries as well. And what we've heard from companies, in some instances they cite that it could be impracticable, but how we apply ASC 250 today when adopting an accounting standard or change in accounting policy, the impracticability threshold is really high, and we really don't see it happen all that often. Would it be appropriate for the revenue standard for us to see it more often just for the adoption of the revenue standard? I don't know. That gets a little bit more complicated. So that's why having a practical expedient seems to be an attractive solution potentially, because number one, it addresses the situations when it would be really difficult. And I think we're talking about just cost benefit considerations. The one piece of information that I think certainly if there are users here as part of the TRG that would speak up, that's the one question just in my mind that I wonder if financial statement users have a particular view, and I can say that I've not heard from anyone in the user community as to whether they would have concerns about that, so that's just an open question.
Others? Russell?
I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess since we have a lot of these contracts, I thought I would just comment that it is a challenge. We have a lot of our aircraft maintenance contracts go back 25, 30 years, and they've been modified a number of times. We tend to think of our modifications framework as being somewhat similar, although there might be some differences once we get into that part of the evaluation. Strikes me that the only real change that it perhaps could make is it could change the unit of account over time, which could be significant, but I just think it would be a real challenge to go back that far and try and figure out what the changes should be. In fact, it would be impractical in some cases because you just don't have the data. So back to the question of how far back would you go, I don't know that it moves the needle that much whether you go back to the earliest year presented or you just stick with the contract as it is on the effective date. I don't know that that's either way.
Yeah, and I think there is some interest on the staff in terms of bringing forward a practical expedient. I think it really is making sure that we work to develop something that, one, is practical, so people look at it and say this really is, you know, easier, it makes sense costs from a cost benefit standpoint, but that it doesn't also then open up, you know, wide other issues of, well, now I have Cullen's walk through a couple fact patterns in a little bit more detail of, does this really make sense? So I think if there would be a subset of TRG members that would be willing to sort of walk through and work with the staff on some of those issues, that might be helpful. Brian?
Thinking about this, I think there are some companies out there who have thought about this, and the board might consider engaging in outreach, which maybe Cullen has already headed down that path of looking at, well, what if you went all the way back, what would that answer be? If you went back, a certain amount, what would that answer be? Is that an issue? The one concern I would have a little bit about saying, well, let's just use the contract as it exists on the initial application date is the possibility of kind of engineering an answer, particularly if the board is considering a deferral to go, well, I don't want to have to go back, so I'll just amend every contract by a dollar or something to avoid having to actually do work. So that was my only other concern.
Ian, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Robert. I just wanted to talk about user input or user comments about transition. And fundamentally, what users want is comparability, and a new standard is a break in the continuity and so a break in the comparability. That's why users typically don't get terribly involved or have a lot of comments on transition. The sort of the user input would be, first comment is the inoperability threshold should remain quite high, or the impracticality threshold. Any practically expedient way of getting the standards to work better, faster, isn't really objectionable as long as the end result is a fairly consistent or comparable application across different issuers.
Okay, thanks. Any other comments? No, nothing further. Tony.
Yeah, and maybe just to echo what a couple of people have said before, my initial reaction, I think, would be to look to the principle in IAS 8. I've also heard that some people might still find it difficult to apply the guidance in IAS 8 when there have been a lot of modifications over a very long period of time. I guess from that perspective, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem with a practical expedient. I think at the moment, maybe to echo what was said in the United States, I'm just not sure how it might work and exactly how you would develop something that actually provides a practical expedient without running the risk. I think there was an illustration in the States of something that might not seem to be a very sensible outcome. And so I think there's a balance there between recognizing the challenge that might exist when you have a lot of modifications over a long period against the balance of actually providing some helpful relief. And I'm not sure I know the answer to that, but I think it's something that ought to be at least factored into the thinking.
Is impracticability in practice judged the same way for IFRS stakeholders as it is in the US, as far as you're aware?
I'm not sure, Henry. And I think we've always seen it as a high threshold.
Yes.
And I think that's probably a common perspective. But when you get into the detail, I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
Thank you. Actually, I just had a response to Robert on transition and the importance to users. I guess the additional thing that should be in the mix, if the dominant desire is for comparability kind of going forward, is just to understand if people do take a practical expedient on transition, how that affects the subsequent accounting as those contracts unwind, and will they necessarily unwind in the same way that the new contracts will. So I think that would just be part of the overall cost-benefit analysis, which is partly backward-looking around the information and the effort that's required to actually have transition. I think it's partly forward-looking about the comparability of similar contracts going forward.
Absolutely.
Further comments? People on the telephone, any comments?
This is Greg Nelson from IBM. I would, as we know, when we looked at this question with respect to transition, you know, as an IT service provider, we've got thousands of contracts that span, you know, quite a lengthy contractual period from 1 year up to 10 years. So this is a challenge for us. And when we talk to others in our industry, it's certainly a challenge for them as well. So we would support the consideration of a practical expedient and would, to Jim's comment, would certainly be willing to assist the staff in looking at some of our contract examples and coming up with a solution that might be workable for the boards. Thank you.
Any further?
This is John Armour. I have a comment as well that I think practical, and our group has looked at practical expedients, would be beneficial to add more for the private sector, particularly those that do not have quarterly interim reporting requirements. It may be practical to reduce the compliance costs here to allow the entity to look at its performance in the year of transition rather than at the point of transition, and look at completed contracts or evaluation at the end of that period for purposes of either a full or modified retro provision. The expedients that are in the standard now apply solely to the full retro, and you might take expedient B and look at that as contracts are complete in the subsequent period and use those values to restate your begin retained earnings if you use the modified retro.
Okay.
Yeah. But we would be glad to participate in any study of this process.
We've got Gary here would like to.
Yeah. Hi, let me direct a question to the staff, and actually I fully support a practical expedient. You know, if we can articulate one, that seems to do the job. Is the practical expedient available to, you know, when you have multiple contracts, multiple years, available to everybody? What if you actually can do it? Would you not be eligible for the practical expedient, or is it just applied to all contracts? Again, I'm thinking the scope of it, because it's possible you can, you don't need it. And then what? You know, and do we limit it only to those that can't do it? You know, and does the staff have a view?
I'm sorry, is the question, would all entities have to apply the expedient?
Well, yeah, I think the question is, what if you don't need the practical expedient, you're capable of doing the standard, would you still be eligible for the practical expedient?
I think it would get to whether or not the board would want to give an option to the practical expedient. I think in the past we've given options to say, you may choose to do X or the practical expedient. So if you don't need the practical expedient, it wouldn't be necessary.
But I think the broader question was, what about within an entity? Would you have to do the practical expedient for all contracts or not? Or what?
I think we'd have to, that'd be something we'd have to think through maybe with this group. Would there be a logical set of contracts where you wouldn't need it? Are you all in or not?
I mean, at the moment, I've got it right, with the practical expedients, you can effectively choose which ones you would like to apply, but you have to apply that consistently to all contracts. So there is a limitation on, you know, how many permutations that you could have here.
Yeah, and again, I'm not prejudging what the answer might be, but I just think these questions got to be answered in it. I mean, basically the scope and breadth, you know, the expedient, if we choose to go that way.
Philippe?
Yeah, my mic doesn't work. Yeah, we left it turned off because we didn't want you to speak.
Yeah, I know. Can you make an exception now for a while? I'm going to use studies.
Yeah, I think there's maybe you have to because I can't.
Okay. Well, not just about this question, whether it's on all or some practical experience. See, to me, the reason for a practical experience is a cost-benefit analysis, where the effect on a multitude of contracts is not expected to be so material as to warrant a lot of work. But you may have an entity with a few large contracts and a multitude of smaller contracts. And the cost-benefit analysis, depending on whether you apply it to the few big contracts or to the very large number of smaller contracts, might result in different conclusions. So it may be that you could think at the level of permitting an entity to apply this practical expedient to the vast population of smaller contracts and not to apply it at the same time automatically to the big contracts where the effect can be expected to be more material for a little less work. So I think it's assessment is not all or nothing.
Yeah. Okay, any more comments?
I think Ian, Russ would like to get in.
I just want to confirm one thing, like from the U.S. perspective. I heard that this is an impediment to retrospective. Is that fair, Russ? In other words,
it matters. It's applicable either way.
I know, but the time you would need if we didn't give it will put retrospective in even more jeopardy for those that may want to do it. Is that a fair observation, Russ and Greg?
It would result in more work, only because you have more contracts that you have to go through. But because our contracts, the ones we're most concerned about, are fairly long, the going back 2 or 3 years doesn't put that many more contracts into the population.
But if you wanted to run dual systems as of, say, 1/1/15 or 1/1/16, would you be ready to do it with all the work you have to do for the 20 or 30 years back?
We would never be ready for,
right,
for that.
Okay, well, we don't
have to answer the impact, the consideration of transition method, and certainly would increase the workload.
Okay. I think we've had a good discussion that most people think a practical expenditure is worth thinking about, but there have been a lot of